the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Tuesday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening live to The Fan. We will take you up to 6:30, full 4.5 hour show today, because the Yankees are one of the few teams in Major League Baseball that still start games correctly at 7:05.
It's a little late.
That means we get to go the distance. So we will have 4.5 good hours for you today, including our 5 o'clock daily feature this week, where we get you ready for your fantasy football drafts. We will talk running backs today with a fantasy expert. Danny, how are you?
I'm very well, my friend. Starting to have my drafts. Next week is where it's really hot and heavy. I got one this Thursday and a couple more next week. And of course, you and I have ours. Grant and Danny, Listener League on Wednesday. Have you had many drafts yet?
I have had 0 drafts.
0 so far? It has been a fascinating, I think I probably say something like this every year, but there really is an incredible amount of variance into what people are thinking and how drafts are going to go, and leagues where I know people are really smart. There's like position runs early, and there's not really as much consensus up at the top of the board, because you got a lot of guys with, again, a lot of variables there. So like, you're going to trust Christian McCaffrey up top? You're going to trust Saquon Barkley after an outrageous number of touches or whatever? We'll answer those questions today at 5.
Yeah, I think Saquon Barkley is in for a massive dip this year, which is not saying a whole lot when you have one of the greatest years of all time.
Like ever.
But history just suggests when a guy touches the football as much as he did, and not only was he the ultimate workhorse in the regular season as a 2,000-yard back who would have broken the rushing record had they have played him in the final week for more carries, in the playoffs, they rode him all the way to and through the Super Bowl. And so when you just look at the modern era and guys who were as involved and took on as much contact as him, had as many car crashes, so to speak, between the lines as he did last year, the next year, your body doesn't hold up.
Mm-hmm.
So I am trying to avoid Saquon Barkley, but there are certain spots on the board where you just can't.
Yeah, if you're an eighth, are you going to pass on him? No, you can't. I mean,
he's still going second, basically.
Totally.
Third at the latest. But yeah, I'm curious to see what happens tomorrow. That'll be my first draft. I will say I've gotten a lot of texts from buddies, my siblings, like people in leagues that have drafted. And Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, old Bill.
There's a little buzz.
In this town, mm-hmm. when you're in leagues with Commanders fans.
Yeah, he's gone.
He is going very, very early. Like, I've heard as crazy as round 5 and things. People, the hype train has left the station on Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt. The value is now late round flyer on Chris Rodriguez.
Seriously. If you're handcuffing, because you're talking about a starting running back now, according to folks. I mean, that the last game, we didn't talk much about it, obviously, because McLaurin signed and otherwise, but last game of the preseason, usage there kind of tells you, who do you want to keep in bubble wrap? Krosky Merritt. I guess he did enough in preseason game number 2 to make him say, we don't need him beaten up, taking some abuse in game number 3. Fascinating.
So it's cut down day around the NFL. As significant names get axed, we are going to update you, and we will let you know what's going on both here in D.C. and around the national. All day long on the show. So we've got you covered through 6:30 on cutdown day as rosters are formed in finality going up to the close of business here. Teams whittling it down to 53. But some of the notables for the Commanders so far that stand out to me. 28-year-old Cleveland Farrell, who last year played in 14 games, had 3.5 sacks. He's more of a run stuffer than a pass rusher, was originally drafted at the top of the board by the then Oakland Raiders. 4th overall pick in the draft out of Clemson, if you remember. Became a decent player for the Raiders, played a year in San Francisco in the Adam Peters era, then was signed and brought to Washington as one of the veterans that came over in free agency last year. Cleveland Farrell got cut today. Now, this is one that I actually was predicting, but I think will surprise a lot of people because it felt like he had a roster spot when camp began. The only tell for me was when I watched the Bengals game and he's on the field in the 4th quarter in the dress rehearsal, my antenna went up a little bit.
Yeah.
That's not normal. Then he played almost the entirety of the first half against the Ravens when, again, 33 guys didn't play in that game at all. That meant a lot to this team, and I thought Cleveland Farrell might get cut. And sure enough, he has. But I'm really curious to see what happens on the D-line because we've also heard today that Jalen Holmes, who I like a lot, got released. He can play inside. He can play outside. And Andre Jones, the former 7th-round pick previous regime, has also been cut. So that sounds like really, really good news for Javonte Jean-Baptiste. That sounds like very, very good news for Jacob Martin, who I think was probably a roster lock anyway, but you could call him a bubble player. So we'll see what else happens. I mean, this is the day now where Adam Peters has got an idea of what their 53 looks like, but he's also working the phones. We heard the Diana Rossini report today that they're trying to trade Noah Igbinoghi. I don't know how much legitimacy is to that or not, but we've seen that last year.
Yeah, it's a trial balloon. See what you can
do. They traded John Ridgeway last year. We see all over the league the last several days, guys getting moved. So Farrell out, Holmes and Jones also released. There is going to be depth released on the D-line by this team that will play for other teams this year.
Agreed, yeah. And you know, again, I'm trying to monitor who everyone else is cutting as well. Maybe that somebody comes in. But in terms of the defensive line, doing my quick back-of-the-napkin math, I had 10 defensive linemen thinking that would be the number they went with. Does them moving on from Holmes and or Farrell tell you maybe they go with 9? Thinking that there's some rotation there or, some mix and matching there? Or do you still think it's 10? Because I'm trying to figure out who the 10th player would be, because we now know that I had Holmes in as one of the 10. If he's gone and Farrell's gone, do they get to 10?
I have not heard that Sheldon Day's been released yet.
I haven't either.
They really, really liked Sheldon Day last year.
So that's another interior guy. So that's Payne, Kinlaw, Newton, Day, and maybe Eddie Goldman. So that could be 5 defensive tackles then.
Now, again, I'll reference my 53 occasionally. Everyone has their own. It means nothing. But I had Goldman out as well.
Mm-hmm.
I had both Goldman and Cleland Farrell out. But yeah, if you're talking about trying to just find 9 or 10, Dorrance Armstrong, Daron Payne, Javon Kinlaw, Von Miller, lock pile.
Yep.
Dietrich Wise, lock. Johnny Newton, lock. That's 6. Jacob Martin in, that's 7. If we say Eddie Goldman's in, that's 8. I think we now know that Javonte Jean-Baptiste probably made it based on what we know at defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 9. That would mean, knowing that Andre Jones has been released, Carl Davis has been released, right? We heard that
name.
Jalen Holmes has been cut. So the only other guy, if they cut Sheldon Day, it's 9. If they keep him, that would be 10. And there's also the possibility of actually adding something from outside the building that they like to be one of the 10 as well. Like if they cut Day, it's 9 of their own, but maybe there's someone that got cut somewhere else that becomes the 10th guy.
Indeed. Yeah, that's where the challenge comes in. Again, it is a numbers game because you're always, it's obviously a numbers game, you're getting to 53, but wherever there's a squeeze, right, where you go, okay, we're gonna keep one less guy at, say, a receiver spot, where we're only going to go with 5 instead of 6 because we're getting our special teamer from an extra linebacker or an extra safety or whatever it is, then, or the flip side of that is if we keep a 10th, it means we can't keep the 6th wide receiver or the 7th linebacker or whatever.
Good news, though, for Eddie Goldman so far, I would say. Based on,
to this point, yeah.
Carl Davis being out, I think a lot of people had him in, and some of the other back-of-the-roster math we're doing now with Jalen Holmes and some of these guys that didn't make the roster. So again, as these names trickle out, we will get you the breaking news first here on Grant and Danny on The Fan throughout the show, so keep it right here on Cutdown Day. Some other notables, though. Hop into the other side of the ball. Sam Hartman released. This was a no-brainer, I felt like. He's going to be on the practice squad almost certainly. So interestingly, I did the Take Command pod last night with Logan Paulson. For those of you that don't know, podcast, couple of years, X's and O's, breaking down the film. Really, really good show that Logan's been a part of with Craig Hoffman, who left the company for an awesome opportunity with Monumental. So I've taken over Take Command with him here right before the season. So yesterday we were breaking down the roster from all angles and talking about burning questions. I bring this up to say, even though we both had Sam Hartman out, and in fact, Logan had 2 quarterbacks in. He also has Josh Johnson not making the roster. He thinks they should go get somebody else, another veteran maybe, to be their 3rd quarterback if they want to do that because of the Marcus Mariota Achilles issue. His takeaway rewatching the tape from Sam Hartman in the Ravens game, which felt just awful, he said, people are going to hate this. He did not play nearly as bad as people think. He said there were a couple of really, really bad decisions. The pick 6 was one of them. He said, but a lot of his miscues were based on receivers not doing their job correctly, either by way of the route they ran or how they ran their route or telegraphing things for a defensive back. And I do think that's interesting because we talk about the other side of this equation a lot, this relationship between the bad quarterback at the end of a preseason game and a receiver that's trying to get seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the quarterback's not playing well, if he's not processing, ball's not coming out, he's not throwing you a catchable pass, what am I supposed to do here? But it goes both ways, too. There are plays, certainly, where that happened with Johnson, with Hartman, with all these guys around the league that have been waived today. at quarterback who are playing in the fourth quarter of these games. But occasionally as a quarterback, if you're Sam Hartman, you don't think he might look a little bit better out there with the Terry McLaurin, Noah Brown, Zach Ertz, and behind a number one offensive line?
I'm sure you'd think, yeah.
So I just think they like him enough that he will be on the P squad. And let's face it, he's Jaden's boy.
Yeah. I mean, again,
they're good pals, and the camaraderie in the quarterback room matters.
Not to be flippant about that. And again, it's more than playing. Because again, if that person has to play, your season is already doomed.
It just
forget
lists
about
him. When you sign him to the practice squad, instead of listing him as quarterback, list him Sam Hartman, Jaden Daniels, BFF totes.
Yeah, good in the film room. Awesome on road trips.
Handsome gentleman.
Seriously. And it's easy to scoff at that. And Jared, scoff away if that's what you're feeling. But the point is, to me, the practice squad quarterback having a good rapport with the other guys, being good in that room, helping guide, mentor, not in terms of running good play or whether it's practice squad type stuff. It's not practice squad. Scout, what am I trying to say? Scout team, thank you very much. Whether it's running that sort of stuff, there's a value in it to have that room be as good as it could possibly be. If that person has to play, you're doomed. I expect the third quarterback, if there is one, to be Josh Johnson. It's not like he lit it up either. It was better, certainly, than Hartman was. But you need that third quarterback, at least initially, with Mariota's health kind of being uncertain. But Hartman will be on the practice squad, and he should be, quite frankly. I mean, again, this is a good rapport, good relationship. Do not rock the boat.
So far, wide receivers playing out a lot like we had predicted. So the obvious is who's in, right? And that's Terry McLaurin, Noah Brown, Deebo Samuel, Jalen Lane, and presumably Luke McCaffrey based on being a third-round pick last year. So I would put them all five guys in Sharpie, right? The first four of them well-deserved and need to be here. Luke, I think, is still intriguing enough as a prospect and was drafted high enough last year that you're not willing to cut bait, and he's going to be in the mix. So we're good there with those five?
Yes.
The question was, are they going to keep a sixth, and will it be one of these veterans who came in during or before camp, whether that's K.J. Osborne, who was here at the end of last year, Chris Moore over the offseason, Michael Gallup, who they cut yesterday. So they've already cut all three of the veterans. Gallup out yesterday, and today K.J. Osborne, who had back-to-back 500-yard seasons in Minnesota at one point, and Chris Moore, who's done some good things in the league on Sundays, they're gone. Now, I think they'll be in the building, at least one or both of them, on the practice squad potentially. But as we wait to find out how the back of the roster is going to be shaped, mm-hmm. if they keep a sixth, it would be one of, right now, we have not heard on Ja'Cory Brooks, Jacoby Jones, Tay Martin, River Craycraft, I guess, and then there were four, so to speak. But my point all along has been, I didn't think anybody separated themselves and proved that they needed to make the roster. If I had to keep six because I can't get someone from somewhere else, my sixth guy would be Ja'Cory Brooks, the undrafted free agent out of Louisville.
Mine too.
I think he did enough in training camp and in the preseason that he is the sixth best guy in the building. But I also know with every ounce of being inside of me that you could get him to the practice squad. And if that is the case, then why wouldn't you just keep five for now? You've still got him in the building moving forward. And now you're shopping. There are decent wide receivers. There's some names. There's some guys that have caught 50 passes over the last few years that are coming available that maybe you like more from a veteran presence standpoint than whatever you were getting out of Osborne and some of those other guys. So I've kind of thought all along it would be those five locks, and then you shop the market for the sixth guy. We could be headed in that direction, although I'm waiting to see exactly what happens with Ja'Cory Brooks. He's the most interesting other name to me.
Yeah, this would be a candidate, and I hate for these sorts of things because you might find out, hey, you made the 53, and then someone's available you didn't think. Hey, you didn't make the 53 anymore. You're now, getting bumped down to the practice squad if you're willing to sign there. That would be a candidate there, or Brooks would be a candidate there for me in that regard. Their fourth, maybe fifth, maybe sixth best receiver, I don't think plays on this roster just yet. In other words, there are better players out there that will become available than guys that they have here in the building
fourth?
At this point. Maybe fourth, but probably fifth or sixth.
I think that's crazy. I mean, so you didn't like what you saw from Jalen Lane a whole lot.
I like him as a gadget guy, close to the line of scrimmage, but I'm talking about bona fide NFL wide receiver that's, caught 30, 40, 50, 60 passes in a season. I bet you something like that's going to be available.
Look, there's going to be someone cut that you could sign that's caught more passes in a season than Jalen Lane, who's never played because he's a rookie. But I don't think anybody will come in here that could help you with speed and twitch and some of those things. Like, I'll say this. There's no one that just had the camp that Jalen Lane had, having been out there as many days as I was watching those practices, that's about to get cut with his upside as a 4.3, 4.40 guy who was just drafted in the, I mean, not that late. I think it was the fourth round, right? So early fourth, basically, or mid rounds. They're in a place where they're going to involve him offensively. I did not think that would be the case going in. I thought he'd be a return man and a gadget guy. And to your point, it's not going to be like week one, he's going to catch four balls. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough footballs to go around. You've got McLaurin and Brown healthy. In a world, though, where let's say Terry's on a pitch count, maybe Jalen Lane is the guy taking the lid off, running the love of the game routes, going, you know, pressing things vertically to open things up underneath for Zach Ertz, because they don't really have that guy otherwise.
They do not.
That straight line speed might be what he has to provide. But if we're talking training camp, preseason, I'll call it August, right? Yep. The summer, the most impressive receivers on this team, Deebo Samuel 1, Jalen Lane 2. And then a pretty big gap, but I don't even know where to go after that.
Because you didn't see anyone else. Yeah.
Right. I mean, there was
no Noah Brown, and Terry McLaurin was in a hoodie.
And I mean, you could kind of put the rest of the guys in a blender. I would probably say Jacory Brooks. Remember, he was a big story the first couple days of camp.
Yeah, but he wanted to talk about it.
He actually was awesome those first few practices, and he led them in catches and yards against New England in the first preseason game. Let's do this next. I want to open up the phones for you guys on Cutdown Day at 800-636-1067. Here's the topic at hand. What is your number one burning roster question that you're most interested in? We've got a little indicator on how things are trending based on some of the names right now. But we'll go both sides of the ball, you and I, Danny. And for everyone else, we'll just ask you for your number one overall. But number one burning question you're most interested in, you know, if you could find out ahead of everybody else, like, what's the thing that fascinates you about the decisions they're making today in Ashburn over the next couple of hours? Grant and Danny with you on The Fan.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
I went back and watched the Sam Hartman film, and this is going to get a lot of people pissed off, but I'm okay saying it, is when you watch the Sam Hartman tape, some of that's him. I think the ball is always relatively going to the right spot. I think on the interception, they totally, especially the first one, you know, like where the interception pick six, he got fooled by the coverage a little bit. They were in man a lot on the drive before. They rolled a cover three. Mistakes happen. I get it. He's a young player. But there's some of those where I'm like, this receiver is not running this route the way it needs to be run to the standard of an NFL player. And I'm not going to shout that guy out here, but I kind of was like, that's going to make him look worse. So I think there was kind of a mix of poor quarterback play or lacking quarterback play at times, lacking receiver play at times. Because again, it's a young receiver group outside of a couple veterans.
That was Logan Paulson. That's what I was talking about from our Take Command episode that dropped this morning. I think he's perfectly willing to acknowledge it was not a good preseason for Hartman, but maybe it's not as bad as it looks when you're out there with a bunch of guys like him that aren't going to be on this roster. But Hartman was released and is very likely going to be part of this practice squad as QB4 in the organization. Maybe the more interesting question is QB3 Josh Johnson or someone that's not in the building just yet? And along those lines, we're asking you right now, as we welcome you back on Grant and Danny, what is your most pressing question about the roster that you're most intrigued by? 800-636-1067. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. Kristen did that. She says, number one question for me has to be, who's going to be on the roster for the first game that is not here today? I think that's, first of all, a lock. At least one, if not a
couple.
You would
think so, right?
Maybe as many as three or four guys wouldn't really surprise me that much. But Noah Brown's the example from a year ago. August 28th, 2 days from now, Noah Brown comes in from Houston, and in their first win of the season in week two, he made the big catch to set up a game-winning field goal, right? So there are going to be guys that are brought in that aren't here at this point. And that's something that we're going to have to track in the next couple of days. One more released player that's trickled out from NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. The Commanders have cut wide receiver Tay Martin, so you can whittle one more receiver off of the potential depth chart.
A couple of local folks also reporting Dimitri Felton, running back, depth chart guy who had a good camp and looked pretty good at times in the preseason. Great practice squad candidate for them as well.
I think he'll be in the building.
I do too.
There's no reason not to keep him around, especially if you're keeping McNichols on as a fourth running back, then Felton's kind of the next guy up.
Yep.
And you're going to have at least one, if not a couple backs on the practice squad. All right, so Danny, you go first here. Biggest decision on offense for you that you're most intrigued by?
Tight end. Kind of under-talked about. You know about Zach Ertz, right? Good, done. You would think, obviously, you know, no mystery here, that Ben Sinnott makes it, no problem, second-round pick from a year ago, and now you know John Bates. But to me, I haven't seen very much from Ben Sinnott. The only thing I've seen is Colson Yankoff catch a ball and rumble and look pretty good. I wonder if that's your fourth tight end. Are you keeping four as you kind of go forward? That's something I haven't heard much talked about. And again, it's because I would say, thanks so much, Colson Yankoff. You're expendable because I've got Ben Sinnott. Do I? He's here. I mean, he'll be on the team, but I have not seen very much at all to make me think I don't need that fourth guy.
So Colson Yankoff is a special teams war daddy who I don't think is going anywhere. And after you show that you can make an explosive play, 52-yard catch in a preseason game, certainly doesn't hurt your cause either, to your point. Yeah, tight end, I guess, is curious. I think it's four and it's a lock, essentially. But none of us really know anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So this will be an area. Here's what I'll say. If Colson Yankoff doesn't make the team and they only keep three,
they're going somewhere else to get one.
Well, not even that. I think if they're keeping four, they'll keep Yankoff because he's awesome on special teams. But what I was going to say is, if Colson Yankoff gets cut, I'll be more surprised by that than Cleveland Farrell getting cut earlier today, who's like the most notable, interesting thing that's happened. Because Sinnott is a second-round pick. He's not Luke McCaffrey, where right now, this moment, he doesn't help you that much on offense. If Sinnott's out there, he's a very decent blocker. He can do some things in line at the line of scrimmage, and then the question is, can you get him the football or not? But that's kind of the bonus to, like, the ground level. You don't want this in the second round in the top 55 where he got drafted. But, like, he can do a lot of stuff at the line of scrimmage that will help you. So I think they feel okay about Ben Sinnott. The ceiling is the question now, how involved he'll be as a receiver. Reasonable. And we should want more than we've gotten as a fan base. Ertz is, if he's healthy, going to be, you know, a top 10 tight end in terms of targets and catches in the league. John Bates is arguably, at this point, one of the best blocking tight ends in all of football. They paid that guy $7 million a year to come back.
Dude, they paid him.
So, yeah, I think all four get in. And I think you're right. You have not heard a lot of talk about that. But at least from the conversations I've had with the people that cover the team, it just seems like there's not a whole lot of question about it. Like, they all are kind of assuming that Yankoff's in and that all four make it. Here's mine. What do you think about this? I want to bounce this off of you. I am really curious to see what happens on the offensive line at the start of this season. So Sam Cosmi is going to be on PUP IR, whatever it is, to start the year, in my opinion. They have acted like that's not going to happen. I have felt like that was the case since before practice started.
Well, this is my question. I hate to accuse everyone of lying, but it feels like there's this pretend game where he might be ready to suit up in week one. And if he's not ready to suit up in week one, you wouldn't think he's ready in week two, because week two is 4 days later on Thursday. So I've been kind of a little bit, it wouldn't be that disappointing if you say, yeah, he'll probably miss the first 4 weeks. And we actually have some depth to fill in. We're in a pretty good place there. Totally. We're not going to waste a spot, but back to you.
I just don't think there is a need to rule him out or to say 3 weeks ago that he's probably not going to be ready at the start of the year. Like, you give the information when you have to give the information. Mm-hmm. You allow him to surprise you and to expedite his recovery or whatever. And he's moving along at a good clip. But I just think there's no reason to rush this guy. To your point, you just said it well. They have depth. They have some good NFL players. Nick Allegretti was a full-time starter at guard for them all of last year. If you got to plug him in for a few weeks, it's not the end of the world, right? If Connerly's ready at right tackle and Andrew Wiley can slide down to guard. I mean, he started inside on a Super Bowl team at one point. So you're okay there. So I think Cosmi goes to PUP. But here's my fascination. Week one against the Giants, against the best defensive front you're going to face all year, do you start Josh Connerly and play him full-time as your right tackle? That's my guy. Every snap, you're out there with the first-team offense. Or do they do the thing they did with Brandon Coleman at the beginning of last year? He was a third-round pick, not a first-rounder, where they rotated him. Nobody's improved more since the beginning of training camp than Josh Connerly. And if you give him another 13 days, 12 days from right now, I'm sure there's going to be even more significant improvement. But is he ready for Brian Burns? Is he ready for the New York Giants front? So if they want to rotate Wiley and him, first couple of games, then Allegretti's your starting guard. If they feel like Connerly's ready to just be thrown into the deep end and kick Wiley down to guard, well, here's why this matters. Now Allegretti can be your backup center, and you don't need to keep a guy like Michael Dieter. But if Allegretti's starting at guard, you might need to keep Dieter as a backup center or bring in a center that gets cut somewhere else, because otherwise, like, you don't have the center depth that you're looking for because Allegretti's busy moonlighting as a guard. You see what I'm saying?
That's exactly what you're saying.
So
yeah,
that is
point.
What I don't have an answer for, and if I could get one answer with Truth Serum right now, it would be, do they envision Connerly being an every down right tackle in week one? Or are they going to have Wiley either play that game or rotate in that game?
Just going on past precedent, I would bet they do that rotation bit. It's not necessarily what I would do. I would go Connerly, deep end, let's go. And you know who's going to be to your right an awful lot is John Bates. Right? Just to make sure. Just the extra little chip, the extra little maybe, you know, occasionally dealing with a rusher on certain downs, a little bit more max protect. Because we want to make sure that you are fine. And eventually you'll be on that island all by your lonesome. Because he'll grow into that, I think.
All right, so those are our big questions on offense. We'll get to our defensive queries here coming up in a few minutes. But let's get to the phones. AD, Washington State, listening on the Odyssey app. Always free and available wherever you are. What's up, AD? How are you?
I'm okay. How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Very well. What do you got?
Well, I think the biggest thing we need going to the first regular season would be a kicker. We need a reliable kicker that we can depend on. Last year, we had the Dallas game that we lost due to a kicker. And then for the playoffs, I think it was the last game towards the playoffs, we had a dink that we barely could have lost. So we need somebody that we can really rely on.
Thank you. I mean, they felt like they found that guy in Matt Gay, who's been a career quality kicker. He has struggled a bit from 50 and beyond. Going back to last year, he was 3-for-9 from 50 plus. That was the first time he'd been terrible in that range. And when you look around the league and mm-hmm. you see guys like Brandon Aubrey in the preseason hitting 66 yarders and a kid from Jacksonville, I don't even know his name, hit a 70 yarder in an exhibition game. Like 54 can't be an insurmountable task.
Yeah, the Ravens rookie from Arizona hit a 60 yarder in their preseason game against somebody. I can't remember who.
Joey Sly, old friend.
Yeah.
Hit a 63 yarder, by the way. Like you need to be able to make kicks from 50 to 55. Even 55 to 58 is like the new 45 to 48. So he's going to have to be able to do that. But the good news is in that range, they go for a lot.
I was going to say, that's go for it range.
Fourth down here, you got five on it. That's the plan for the most part. And he did make 8 kicks 50-plus the year before, 15 over the 2 years before with the Indianapolis Colts. This is a guy who early on in his career was pretty automatic with the Rams. You know, that 2021 season, he was one of the better kickers in the league. He was 32 of 34, made 4 of 5 from 50-plus. They signed him to a significant commitment when you look at the contract for the kicking position. So they think they've got a guy. Now, I know fans are a little nervous because he missed kicks in the preseason. One of them was long, and I don't really care that much about, but the other is one he's got to make. I would say this. I don't feel as nervous about Gay as most fans do, but if he misses a kick against the Giants from inside of 50, they're likely to have to start answering some questions. And if he misses a couple kicks in those first 10 days in those first two games, you're working guys out and having some type of competition going into week three.
Yeah, so for me, the things that I care about, 50-plus, obviously the world has changed in that regard. I wouldn't say it's automatic, but it's more expected that you're going to be able to do that. The part that I care about is when you've driven all the way down and there has to be points, you can't have the shanks. That 33-yarder that's like, that's wide to the right on this one. Oh, well, I can't do oh, well.
And I don't think that's something he's done much of.
He has been awesome. 90%+ over the last 4 years in that 30 to like almost 50 range.
Yeah.
That's what I care about the most, where you can't have that long. If you get one first down and you're trying to kick a bomb, you don't get it. Okay. It's that like full drive down the field, time of possession, and you end up with nothing. Those are the ones I can't have.
So I do agree with you. And that's definitely how I felt like 10 years ago, especially.
I know the world's changed. I haven't updated.
But I am now kind of the belief that you're missing out if you don't have a guy that can hit a 58 yarder. I mean, just you look around and think about what this means. It means you can get to the 40-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
So you start your, you know, they have a bad kick or, you know, any kind of return now is almost to the 30. You basically need 25 yards and you're in field goal range on a drive. That's it. Two first downs and another 5 or 6 yards and you're kicking a 59-yard field goal. And for a lot of guys around the NFL, you know, that's yawning getting out of bed. Like until you get to 63, 64, you're not really testing my range. Reese in St. Mary's, you're on the Fan. How are you?
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Chilling.
Hey, man.
I'm intrigued by the offense, and bear with me for a minute when I say this. when you got Deebo going one way, you got that fast wide receiver going the other way, you got Terry McLaurin going up, you got the fast running back coming out the backfield, and most of all, you got Jaden Daniel after all them fakes that he can actually take it to the house itself. So I'm intrigued by the eye candy that we're going to present with that. That's what I'm intrigued by the eye candy we're going to give teams with all that speed we got.
Yeah, they're going to have plenty of movement before the snap, I think. And you're right. This is Skittles and Starburst and Snickers and Hershey bars.
I mean, that's what I want.
Cliff Kingsbury is going to dial up the eye candy.
I want flat-footed defenders. What that means basically is I can't react yet. I can't move yet. And that's what all the play fix are designed to do. That's what the RPOs are designed to do. It's basically make you reactionary. And if you're reacting to me when I've got a head start, a.k.a. one of these really fast guys you just mentioned, that's where offense can come from.
Rosters being formed as we speak in Ashburn. Question for you guys is, what is your number one burning question? What are you most interested about with this roster as we whittle it down today? 800-636-1067. We're announcing the cuts as they come out in the media this afternoon. Next, our burning question on the defensive side of the ball. This is The Fan.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
And then for that fourth defensive tackle spot, Grant, I think this is where it gets a little bit interesting. It's like Carl Davis, Goldman, and then there's one other, Sheldon Day. Those are the three. And I think Sheldon Day's had a pretty good preseason. I think Carl Davis has actually popped a little bit. And then Goldman, I was a little bit generally disappointed with. I thought, there were some things he did well, some things he did poorly. But I think those are the three. And so it kind of just depends on what you want to get out of that group. And so I ended up saying Carl Davis, but to me, it's like flip a coin. Who could you get to practice squad? And maybe that's another spot of the roster that kind of has some fluctuation to it heading into Wednesday.
That's the voice of Logan Paulson, Take Command show that I do with him. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. That episode breaking down the back of the roster is out and available when we are done tonight. You can check that out if you want. But, we kind of highlighted the back of the D-line as an area to monitor, and someone's getting cut that people don't expect maybe, and it turned out today Cleland Farrell getting the boot may have been that guy. We'll see who actually is the beneficiary as time goes on. But speaking of defense, before we get back to the phones, 800-636-1067 if you want to join us. Danny, your number one burning issue on that side of the ball as Washington cuts its roster down is what?
Linebacker. What are we doing here? Are we doing like two or three guys and just sort of hope for the best? I mean, Jordan McGee's been hurt kind of throughout. Already had Duke Riley having been released to this point. You'd think Kane Medrano is going to be part of this thing, at least initially, as a draft pick. But it wasn't as if he played that great in the preseason. I thought was outplayed, frankly, by Kaho, a guy that kind of came out of nowhere here a little bit. So how many do you keep? Is it five? Is it six? Is there a special teams consideration? Do you sort of consider maybe a Tyler Owens, like almost part of that room as a bigger safety who's kind of a hybrid type guy? Interested to see what they do at linebacker.
So you didn't mention Nick Ballore, the special teams ace, who's going to be on the team.
He's part of it.
And you could almost count him as a specialist, like kicker, punter, snapper, Nick Ballore. And then you go offense, defense, otherwise. But Luvu Wagner Ballore, Jordan McGee is in and healthy now. I don't know if you mentioned him, but he's their third linebacker.
So we haven't seen very much of him because he's been hurt so much.
Right.
But yes.
But he was active and played against the Ravens, mm-hmm. So he's now healthy and he's going to be on the roster. So that's four if you count Ballore as a linebacker. And then I think Kane Medrano is a lock. Sixth-round pick, going to play special teams. I guess it is possible they could cut him and try to get him to practice squad, and I'm sure they would be able to. It's very, very rare that anybody gets claimed. But I don't know why they would feel that necessary when he could help you on special teams. And he did flash defensively. The guy that I love is Ale Kaho. What an amazing preseason he had. And I'm just such a big believer in the romanticism of the undrafted free agent making the roster after outperforming everybody else. You want to believe, if you're sitting in a meeting room listening to Dan Quinn talk on day one of camp as a player, that there's some meritocracy to this. For the most part, where you got drafted, Luke McCaffrey, you know, how much you get paid, veteran player that may make the team, whatever. It's not like those are non-factors. They matter some, right? It's not a true meritocracy. But at the very end of the roster, a guy like Ale Kahu being all over the place, flying around, providing size, 6'2 and 230, running pretty well, 4'5 40, great track record collegiately, Alabama, UCLA, background with Ken Norton Jr. All the boxes get checked. I would love if he got in. I think that would be the story of the summer.
Yeah, Madrano's teammate at UCLA, by the way.
Exactly.
And you're watching this happen on Hard Knocks with the Bills. The kid, I'm blanking on his name, but went to Army and was, you know, had an ACL injury for the Jets in like his first game. And all he's doing is everything you could possibly do.
Yeah.
Like he flashes on film. You can't stop watching him. And he got highlighted by Sean McDermott at one of the initial practices and some of their meetings. Well, if you walk that walk and are using someone as an example and your rhetoric means anything, then your Jeremy Reeveses have to be rewarded sometimes. And that's kind of what's happened here.
Be a great chance to do that with Ale Kahu, the college free agent. I would have gone D-line. We've talked, I think, enough about that just with the news of the day. So
it's kind
I'll
of my
say
thought, too, yeah.
My big question on the secondary would be this report that they're shopping Noah Igbinoghene. How about you just have great depth at corner? Like that guy being your fourth or fifth corner a year after he played a lot, in the nickel, occasionally on the outside, that is indicative of how much better you are at that position. So you're allowed to be really, really deep and really, really good with Trey Amos and Marshawn Lattimore and the collection of players. I don't know about Jonathan Jones's health. You know, if he, who hasn't been healthy recently, is going to be ready to go week one, then maybe Igbinoghene is a little more expendable. But I would keep as many of those guys as possible or do one of their, you know, younger players like Carlin Vigors or Daryl Worley, you know, somebody like that, get a chance to make this roster. Let's go to Bobby in Warsaw on GND. What's up, Bobby? Bobby's not there. Let's go to Mark in Landover Hills. You're on the Fan.
Top of the day to you, gentlemen.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. Hey, Danny. I got to agree with you, buddy. I mean, if you're going to put it the way Grant put it, as far as intriguing, I think you made the good choice for defense, man. It's got to be the linebackers, man. I mean, Bobby can only do so much, and I realize they have Frankie and everything, but, you know, is that synergy going to sneak into that bigger front four and help those backers be better? And some of those guys, like Grant was saying, those young guys are going to get a shot, man, and it's going to be intriguing this year watching the young guys trying to make this team, and when they do, see what they can do.
Thanks, buddy. Let's go to Kevin in Arlington. Kev, what's your big question as we watch the Commanders form the roster?
So I thought I was only allowed to comment on the offensive side. Can it be any side of the ball?
Yeah, whatever you want, man.
Okay, to me, it's what it was at the end of last year. Are we now not only bigger and more stout with Kinlaw and others to do what we must do to set the edge and defend the run and get off the field after third down? I mean, that's, to me, the biggest thing. Can we finally be credible at stopping the run, particularly in the fourth quarter? I think John Klein with the Chunkies this morning pointed out we were horrific at doing that.
100%.
That's my number one question about the team besides depth, and can we stay healthy?
Kevin, appreciate you.
Kevin, I'm going to throw you on hold because Darius wants to talk to you.
That was clearly their agenda this offseason. That was the question they wanted answered this offseason, talking about the front office and where they spent the resources. On the defensive side, offensively, it was about the offensive line. That's what the largest turnover and changes are. Defensively, it was beef, size, whatever you want to call it, up front for that very purpose. That was their priority.
An ESPN analyst thinks the Commanders have a really good chance to go all the way this year. I want to get into that next. Plus, quarterback news all over the NFL. The Saints have finally named a starter. The Cleveland Browns only have three quarterbacks left on their roster after a trade. And the Minnesota Vikings completely reworked the back of their depth chart behind J.J. McCarthy. We'll get to that next on The Fan.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.